Straight Talk on WRHI is presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Now here's Manning Kimmel broadcasting live from Substation 2 on Cherry Road in Rock Hill with Straight Talk, selected by the South Carolina Broadcasters Association as the state's top public affairs program.
And a good afternoon. Welcome into Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, for another edition of our Straight Talk program, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Piedmont Medical Center, a community built on care. You can find out more about them online at PiedmontMedicalCenter.com. Well, you know, it's always good to know that you're going to have one guest, and one, what do you know? Boom, we got two guests. And we'll get into that in just a second, but we're going to be talking about what's going on with the Rock Hill School Board. Helena Miller is with us, who is the chair of the Rock Hill School Board, and she brought a guest. And after I talk to her, we're going to let her do the introductions. Right, Helena?
That sounds great.
All right. So what you need to do, Helena, even though you are a rock star in Rock Hill, that's pretty good, huh? Rockstar and Rock Hill.
Very catchy.
I like that. Yes. Very catchy. Tell everybody the Cliff Notes version about Helena's background.
Helena's background. Helena, I was originally born in Sweden. I've been part of this community for about 20 years. Married to David, and I got three kids, all of them in Rock Hill Schools.
There you go. How do you say straight talk in Swedish?
Rakt talk. Prat.
That's good. I won't be using that one. I'm going to let you do the introductions, if you would.
I will do. Thank you. I brought our interim superintendent, Dr. John Jones, with us today.
Well, John, welcome to Straight Talk. This is your first entree, right?
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about John Jones.
Well, 33 years in education, worked 25 in Union County, North Carolina, where I was a principal at five elementary and middle schools in the county.
And that's what turned your hair
that
white.
That is what did it. That is exactly what did it. And 3 years ago, I got a call from the then superintendent here in Rock Hill Schools and said, let me tell you about this great place with great people. I heard it was the happening place, and I have found that to be true. Came to be to Rock Hill 3 years ago and have just enjoyed the school system and the people associated.
Well, it's, you know, just so you know, John, this is where the earth begins and ends, and so you've landed in the right place.
I have found that to be true. Yes,
sir. Well, make sure you got your orientation right. All right. So you all have had a pretty interesting couple of months, fair to say. Your superintendent, and I know you're not going to talk about this, but I have to talk about it. Your superintendent kind of surprised everybody and said, you know, I need to move on. And it was a very quick transition, one that did not allow a lot of time for, to implement a plan for succession. And fair to say that was a surprise to you, Helena?
So not really going to comment further than what was given in the school board meeting on that one.
So suffice it to say it was a surprise. Anyway, so it didn't take you long to figure out what you wanted to do. You needed, I guess, to start all over again. You've got a search underway, but mm-hmm. who's going to run the ship while all of this is underway? Mm-hmm. And who walks in but John, right?
Absolutely. Well, he was already in the building.
that qualified you for the job.
It did. I was there.
You know, one of the things that we are so blessed with in our school district is that we have an amazing staff. And, you know, when you look at our education system, it is not about one individual person, about the board in and of itself, or any of our individuals in our organization. It really is about the collective effort of everybody, and more importantly, what happens in the classroom with our students.
So basically, regardless of who's at the helm, you've got a plan that's working, and you just need to have somebody step in and keep working the plan.
Pretty much. Yep.
All right. So let me just do a little sidebar here. You obviously are looking to fill the slot, right?
Yes.
Tell me the process for that you've mm-hmm. undertaken.
Mm-hmm. So school boards, one of the most important things that we do is hire the superintendent. You know, it is the one employee that the school board is actually responsible for. All the other ones actually fall under the superintendent. So whoever is the superintendent in Rock Hill Schools has the joy of having seven bosses.
God bless you.
So what we have started with so far is we have created a job description that the board has collectively agreed on with all the qualities that we're looking for in our next superintendent. And that is posted on the website an open rec, so to speak. All the applications go straight to the Board of Trustees, and we will review those as we go forward. We have put a deadline on those applications for October 24th. We have a board meeting on October 25th, and I'm certain that we will have further discussion at that point.
Have you self-imposed a deadline to make a decision, or are you just going to see how long this process takes? I mean, if you're going to get a decent response, and you're not going to close it at the 24th, you're not making a decision on the 25th.
Correct. I think, this is a process, and we need to take our time to evaluate all the applications that come in. And at that point, it's up to the board whether we continue on that track or whether we start looking towards a search firm or not. There's various different ways that the board can handle it.
So, but, I mean, search firms are not inexpensive.
They're not.
And the process you're going through, I mean, if you had a search firm, they would basically be doing a lot of this legwork, and then they would hand you whatever, three or four or five or six candidates, and you're relying upon them to pull out of the big pile what you haven't had time to do. So what the heck? I mean, yeah, I get it. I understand why you're doing this. The description, which we don't have here in front of you, but I mentioned to you before, I mean, are you looking, and these are my terms, not yours, somebody who's 100% academia or somebody who's 50% academia, 50% business, or some other ratio?
I think when you look at the job description, and obviously anytime you design a job description, this is your wish list. When you look at that, what we're looking for is a strong leader with an amazing commitment and love for our community, because we feel that that's what Rock Hill schools and Rock Hill's families deserve, and somebody who understands our community and is willing to learn about our community. And as far as the academia and the business side, to answer your question, we really need somebody who is amazing at both. That goes back to what I said about it being a wish list, right? But, at the end of the day, the way school districts operate has changed tremendously over the past decades, specifically over the past 20 years. It is really about being a partner in the community, and that means that you need somebody who's strong both with the instructional piece and with the community relations.
The other part of this, and again, I don't know a thing about running the school district, but it's a big, big machine. I mean, it's like running a battleship. You got thousands of employees, and you got to do all this stuff. So it would seem to me that part of the job description would be somebody who can, I don't want to say be a drill sergeant, but somebody who can give an order like a captain does on a ship and expect it to be executed without a lot of questions as to why it's being done.
You're absolutely right, and that kind of brings us back to what we said earlier about having amazing people in our district office. Part of being a great leader is having the ability to delegate making sure that we utilize the talents that we have in the district. Because when you run an organization with over 2,400 employees that virtually impacts every facet of our community, it's not about one person. It is about building an amazing team and allowing them to lead in their positions.
Right, and I guess somebody who would have enough gumption to tell the board, love working with you guys, but you're wrong on this because of X, Y, and Z, and for the board to respect that person enough to say, you know what, you're right. We're going to go with what you say because this is your field.
Absolutely.
All right. So during the interim here, John, have you had some fun taking over the reins here and running the ship?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been awesome to be able to continue our message, our Focus 5, and to continue business as usual.
Well, business as usual is almost an oxymoron because we've had this thing enter our life here. It's not quite 2 years into it now, but called COVID. Now, there's some good news about COVID in the Rock Hill School District?
Yes, there
Tell
is
me about
news.
That.
I mean, we are happy to report that over the past 4 weeks, that our numbers of students who are being diagnosed positive are going down. Over the last 4 weeks, we're down 40% on students who are positive, and the number of students having to go through quarantine, we're down 57%. Wow. So we're excited to see that trend and so grateful for our school nurses and our staff and our parents who are supporting those efforts.
So if we take a look at the Rock Hill School District population, you're just under 17,000, is that right?
Yes, sir, 16,926 as of today.
So out of 16,926, how many do you have out right now with these COVID issues?
So we run our data dashboard, and our current data dashboard showed last week that we had 36 students who were out being positive, and that students who were quarantined, 261. But again, that's down from several weeks ago of being 454.
So you're doing well, very well.
Yes, sir.
Gosh, I even hate to ask this question because it's just been, we're all sick of talking about it. A mask or no mask, all that kind of stuff. In the state of South Carolina, governor's not going to mandate it. He's leaving it up to the parents. What are you seeing in the schools, Helena?
So I think the schools are very much mirroring our community. It's mixed. In some ways, our schools kind of operate like little families. So you will see higher percentages in some buildings than you will in others. At this point, it is encouraged but not mandated. There was some discussion in the past board meeting and a request made by a couple of the board members to put it up for discussion at the coming board meeting, which would be October 25th, to potentially do a mask mandate. Where that will go, I have no idea. I know that we have asked for feedback from our nursing staff, but also our building administrators. Because one of the things that we are hearing across the state is obviously just because some districts have done it, you know, how do you enforce it? And who is going to, where's that manpower coming from? That is a conversation for a week and a half from now.
If there isn't enough to deal with, you got to get into this again. My goodness gracious. Well, it is what it is. And I think what people are going to find out, that this is probably going to be with us for quite a while. It's going to be like the flu.
Certainly.
And, you either get a shot for the flu or you don't get a shot for the flu and take your risks and whatever. All right. So, meanwhile, back to the ranch, this thing called education. there isn't any question that having those students in the classroom is almost a necessity. The whole business of trying to teach kids virtually, everybody did the best they could, but the numbers, they just weren't there in terms of what they needed to comprehend. So when you started the school year, John, how far behind did you find most of the students? I mean, did they lose a whole year in terms of what they should have learned because they weren't in the classroom?
What we found is students did not necessarily lose a whole year. Students learned last year, and they learned through this process. Many of our students learned how to navigate the learning that takes place when you're moving from virtual or you're going to remote learning, utilizing digital tools. So our students learned a lot of adaptability, as well as, you know, content that we still in putting what those essential standards are. You know, we have basically looked at how do we make up for the access to that time with a teacher? How do we look at the access to looking at what are those key essential skills that maybe they did miss or didn't have the reinforcement or the time to teach, you know, multiple ways and different modalities? So not necessarily that we were behind a year, but each student trying to identify where they are with our assessments to be able to move them forward.
So that's a very one-on-one type of an issue.
Yes, sir.
So does each teacher in every classroom say, here's Johnny. Johnny did okay. Susie, not so sure. And Tom over here, boy, he's way behind. I mean, did you kind of have to analyze every student to figure out what they needed to catch up on?
Even before COVID, I think in education and teaching, we've tried to be more centered upon the student and a my-size-fits-me approach of how we customize education. Our teachers and our school leaders have been working on that, but now more than ever, yes, our teachers utilizing the tools they have to see where individual students are, looking at tutoring, looking at diagnostic programs that will meet those needs and fill those gaps in assisting teachers. That's that constant work we're learning and adjusting with times with COVID.
Now, Helena, with all these extra dollars that were floating around mm-hmm. the school districts and everywhere else from the federal government, did you have dollars to deal with this? I know you had dollars to help you with a digital transition, but this...
Yes. So the short answer is yes. But when we see the three buckets of ESSER funding that's coming down in from the federal government, there has also been a lot of extra associated costs that districts all over the country has occurred, right? Were incurred. So yes, there is extra money in there specifically dealing with teaching positions. You know, one of the things that we have been able to do as a district due to ESSER is hire an additional 50 classroom teachers. And we do know that obviously student-teacher ratios and those things are something that helps our students. The other piece of ESSER funding that we haven't really touched upon as kind of a result is what this has done to our young folks as far as mental health.
Oh, my God.
We had a presentation from our cabinet members regarding kind of the mental health initiatives and things like that we are doing in our district. And they shared a statistic with us Monday that stopped me in my tracks and almost I almost teared up. And that number was that we have had 60 students attempt suicide since the beginning of the school year, and the statement was made that it was predominantly middle and elementary school kids. So, the focus right now is not only about teaching the child, reading and writing and all those things, but it's also, making sure that our kids are okay. I think the mental health effects on this generation, because of what COVID has done, it's going to be long lasting. And as a district, we got to focus on that too. Because if our kids are not okay mental health wise, how are you going to learn? How are you going to learn the reading and the writing when you're struggling with those kinds of things? So, and there is money in ESSER to help us address some of these things.
Now, you all hired a mental health director or something like that for the mm-hmm. district, is that right?
Yeah, so that's been, we've had those positions earlier,
right.
But we have hired an additional level, basically, an initial right. person, yes.
Now, the acronym you're using for the federal dollars, you call it ESSER?
Yes, ESSER.
And that stands for something.
Yes. Can we not go down that road?
No, we won't go down that road. But I tell you what, we got to go down the road to take a break here and remind everybody that you are listening to Straight Talk live from Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop, presented by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders. Our thanks to our co-sponsor today, Anderson Griggs Investments in Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. Find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. And our thanks to Good Pharmacy, your hometown pharmacy, Ebenezer Road at Camden Avenue in Rock Hill. Okay, now John's all teed up. He's got the bucket of ice to throw on if he doesn't get it right. Fresh subs and salads prepared right before your eyes 7 days a week. At the count of three, how do we do it? One, two, three.
Slice, slice, slice. Slice.
Garden, 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 garden.
Not bad. Back after these words.
If it's 12:30, it's Straight Talk on WRHI.
Have you ever wondered why so many people enjoy dining at Substation 2?
The food is really good, and it's a great price.
The hot meatball subs with jalapenos.
A good deal for a delicious sandwich.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
When your health needs attention, you'll find compassionate care at Piedmont Medical Center. We make it convenient to treat emergencies with online check-in and locations in Rock Hill and Fort Mill. Or if you live with a heart condition, our cardiologists provide advanced treatment options to help you live better. And for pain that slows you down, a minimally invasive surgery can help speed you on to recovery. We are your community built on care.
PiedmontMedicalCenter.com.
Water, fire, mold, and storms cause property damage every day. When it happens to you, it's no time for second best. That's why insurance professionals trust the locally owned and family-run Paul Davis Restoration of Rock Hill. This is Gina Rogers. Paul Davis is committed to providing extraordinary care while serving our neighbors in their time of need. Our team is highly qualified and trained to handle each situation with care and professionalism. When disaster strikes, call Paul Davis. We are here to help. 329-1140 or pauldavisrockhill.com.
Save on your monthly mortgage payment with a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage from Founders Federal Credit Union. Take advantage of low rates while they're still around, and you'll also have no private mortgage insurance costs. The application process is easy, and your mortgage is serviced completely by Founders and always stays with us. Relax, you're home. For more, visit foundersfcu.com/30. Membership qualification required. Credit evaluation, underwriting requirements, terms and conditions apply. Institutions, NMLS identifier number 41064.
There are lots of reasons why people like dining at Substation 2.
I like the friendly service, and I like that the meat's fresh and the food tastes good. They slice the meat right there in front of you.
Man, it's just utterly delicious.
I'm Charlie Ruffalo, and I guarantee you'll feel the same way after eating here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop.
Straight Talk continues now on WRHI. Brought to you by Founders Federal Credit Union. Relax, you're with Founders.
And back we are here at Substation 2, Cherry Road across from Winthrop. We have a table full of educators. We have Helena Miller, who is, of course, the head of the Rock Hill School Board group of trustees. It's board of trustees. Thank you very much, Manny. And Dr. John Jones, who is the interim superintendent of the Rock Hill School District. And, you know, this whole issue of this mental health, you know, it's just unfair. It's just unfair to these kids who, through no fault of their own, because of the COVID, they're stuck at home. They're away from the other kids in classes and the teachers and all that stuff. I mean, they're just thrown into this tailspin. And you got two income families that they got all disrupted. How are we going to take care of our kids and still put food on the table? I mean, it's a mess. So with all this extra help that you've gotten from Uncle Sam, is it really enough? I mean, I don't know how you evaluate this. When you talk about 60 kids in middle school and elementary school who had thought about or attempted suicide, jeez.
And, you know, I don't know that funding is necessarily always the solution to all of it.
Sure.
You can't buy time, and
sure,
some we have lost is time. And the other thing is, just like every other industry, you know, it's finding staffing. You know, the school district, and it's not just us, it's every school district across the country, but, you know, we're no different than that, any other business. One of our challenges this year, and specifically at the beginning of this year, has been finding teachers and finding substitute teachers. And as quarantine procedures have affected us, we've had situations where you know we have trouble finding coverage, and that just kind of amplifies the issue of lack or loss of instruction during COVID.
And to add a little bit of gasoline to the fire, I am sure as I'm sitting here that with all these issues about getting people back to work, not only have you had the teacher issues, but what about bus drivers, John?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about bus drivers. Are you short?
We are short. It is an issue that is in Rock Hill, but also an issue nationally in addressing our bus drivers. Our bus drivers working diligently, just like our other staff members, to make sure that routes are covered, many driving 2-3 routes to respond. Our bus drivers, they are a committed group of adults to our students.
But, I mean, I saw some graphic the other night that in South Carolina as a whole, we're down over 1,000 bus drivers.
Yes.
And it's a simple equation. I mean, first of all, our bus drivers are absolutely amazing. And a lot of times they are really the first responders to our children because they see them first thing in the morning. You know, they get all the situations that are they're bringing from home and how they're feeling in the morning. And, you know, so our bus drivers are amazing. But here's the thing. You have a CDL license right now. You know, the best place to make an amazing living is probably not a public school district. And that is one of the biggest challenges that we have.
Hmm. So, you know, as you call it, ESSER dollars are going to dry up at some point. I don't know when, but at some point they will.
They're all timed, but 2 to 3 years, they will all be gone.
Which will, you know, you've added these extra staff people, and so when those dollars disappear, you're going to have to somehow work that into your budget if you still need these positions, which my guess is you will.
That's a million-dollar question.
So give me some good news here. Come on, John, give me some good news. Tell me something really fantastic is going on right now.
Well, in Rock Hill Schools, I think overall this fall, we're seeing more of our students back in school. We gave you the numbers, but last year we had 38% of our students who were being instructed virtually at home by their parent choice or by their circumstances. And right now we have approximately 8% of our students that are in our virtual academy. Our virtual academy specifically for those students who are looking for that modality, who are interested in that, and we continue to grow that program. But it is a good thing to see more congestion in student parking lots and to see those lines longer at the school that our parents are back. So first and foremost, our parents and families who are making a commitment to come back face-to-face to Rock Hill Schools. And then from that, the resources and the problem solving, I really salute the folks in Rock Hill Schools because you have a lot of people who are focused on communicating and problem solving and being very flexible. So an example of that is with the demands that parents needed for information with COVID, getting responses from our nurses and our schools was becoming overwhelming. So we've opened a COVID call center. It's our third week in operation with that parents can reach out both through email and reach out to the COVID center to get questions answered. We're staffed by 8 folks and 2 nurses that are giving information and providing that to parents. That's one thing that we could do to be more efficient in our work. So, again, problem solving, that's looking there. And I think our work continues this. Okay, what next do we need to do to be flexible and support our schools?
Interesting question because when you take a look at all these issues involving supply chain, right?
Oh.
Getting goods from point A to point B. And I was listening to a report last night which basically said, despite everything the federal government's doing right now, it's going to take until the middle of next year to resolve just the supply chain issues. So if you flip that around to education, with all the things you're doing and with the lost time that students had and with the mental health issues we've talked about, I mean, is there a realistic expectation as to when we can get this thing back to normal and the supply chain is working the way we want it to work?
I think what we got to recognize is that education and society is never going to look like it did pre-COVID. And with the risk of sounding silly, I don't know that that's necessarily always a bad thing. Because there are lessons that we have learned through COVID, especially when it comes to, you know, accessibility for all of our students, the way we handle absences and things like that, and even instruction and recruiting teachers that don't even reside in this area to be able to teach virtually. Some of these things are not necessarily bad.
Right.
It's lessons that we were forced to learn, and every experience is something you draw from. So I do think that we're hopefully at the tail end of a situation where numbers are going down. I think this morning they were actually at 20 positive. So,
well, listen, Helena, thank you for being with us. John, glad to have you here first time around. Hope we get back together soon, and we'll have a brighter report to give everybody on our Straight Talk program. Made possible, of course, by Founders Federal Credit Union, Relax Here with Founders, and by Anderson Griggs Investments at Old Town Rock Hill. Common sense, intelligent advice for conservative investors. You can find out more online at AndersonGriggs.com. All right, you got one last chance now to keep up the good work for Substation 2. Fresh subs and salads 6 days a week between 10 a.m. and 8 p.m. The magical formula for doing it is pretty simple. It's in these white letters, and at the count of three, we're going to say it together. 1, 2, 3. Dr. Oliver's here. Here we go.
Slice, slice, slice. Garden, garden, garden.
Have a wonderful day. We'll see you on the radio tomorrow. Bye.